Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. This is Ann Garner. Welcome to the Wednesday Cosmic Citizen broadcast. I want to welcome you today, and we're waiting on our special guest, Ben Bowler. He's in Thailand, so he may have a little problem getting through. And so what we're going to do right now is, here we go. I believe we have Ben. Let's see if this is Ben.
Hey, good evening, Ann.
Hello. Good morning. Good evening, Ben.
Good evening. How are you?
Great. We're waiting for some folks to queue up, Ben. So I'm going to play a song by our dear friend, my dearest friend, Pato. And and you will love it because it's actually for your son. And since we have a lot of trouble, there's apparently some people having problems. So why don't we play the entire song? Because your son is named after Life is a Miracle. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right. Well, we were thinking of names in the song. We were listening to one night and it came to us that the acronym of this song is Liam, which we both agreed, my wife and I, thought it would be a great name. So, yeah.
That's wonderful. So, take it away, Pato.
In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and God said, let there be light.
Light, oh light.
Life is a miracle,
oh life.
Life, oh life. Life is a miracle. It's a miracle every time a mother gives birth. Tell me who can say how much a child is worth. A miracle living on this planet Earth, rotating to the rhythm of the universe. Life more precious than the rarest stone, more valuable than silver or gold. Life, the essence is invisible to the scientific mind, it's impossible. Like the secret of the seed that grows into a tree, the starry galaxies remain a mystery. Oceans and the seas, the air we breathe, God knows that I believe. Life is a miracle. Life, oh life. Life is a miracle,
oh life.
Life, oh life. Life is a miracle. As I turn one page of our history, I see so many great personalities, like Marcos, Messiah, Garvey, Emperor Selassie, and the great Bob Marley. Malcolm X with any means necessary, Martin Luther marching to victory, Mother Teresa, Princess Diana, even Tupac Shakur, and the one Daddy Biggie. Well, they will always have a place in our memory, and in time to come, you wait and see, they will all get the gift of eternity. God knows that I believe. Life is a miracle. Thank you, Jah, for the gift of life. And though this world is filled with trouble and strife, in time to come it will be worth the price. Life, the journey of experience, by growing we secure our deliverance. Life, the phenomenon, the prodigy, the marvel of an undiscovered destiny. So let's give thanks to our Father above for all of the wonderful things that He does. Life is the ultimate gift of love. God knows that I believe. Yes, I do. Life is a miracle. It's true. Life, oh life, life is a miracle.
Oh life,
life, oh life,
life is a miracle. Life, oh life,
life is a miracle.
Oh life,
life, oh life,
life is a miracle. Life, oh la la, to paradise. Life, oh, oh, life is a miracle.
Okay, welcome back to Cosmic Citizen Broadcast on Wednesday, and we want to invite you to join our sister broadcast on Saturday, where the co-hosts are Paula Thompson and Kristalyn Beek Larson, and on occasion, Diane LeBrec. And of course, my co-host here is Larry Watkins. He is our engineer and what I call our silent co-host, and I'm seeing here, we're praying that Larry is okay. I don't see him on the board yet. And we welcome our guest, Ben Bowler. And Ben is calling from Thailand. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Ann. Greetings from Thailand.
The sound is wonderful.
Yeah, I'm just ringing from the landline. I thought it would be easier.
Yes, the Skype is wonderful. And however, it does cut off, and cell phones will drop also. So I really appreciate it. I know that'll be a pretty expensive call for you, but you're about altruistic service, and we trust and faith that those monies will be replaced in your life.
Probably just a good time to point out, too, but the song Liam is 8 months old, and I'm on baby watching duty tonight, so I've got the baby phone out with me. If he wakes up and starts crying, I'm going to have to attend to him for 10 or 15 minutes, just to give you a heads up.
Well, that's okay. We're supposed to have some people who call in. This is a virtual study group. And if they don't, the good thing about the Urantia book is, and you are a reader of the Urantia book, we want to clarify that. And in a very wonderful way, in a discreet way, I'll say that. And I think wisdom is dictated here. Also, I'm looking over here, I have a Buddhist chant book that I always have with me, so I could read the blessings chant, right? I wish we had one of our monk friends to call in and do the chanting. So, Ben, that is wonderful that you and your precious wife chose to name your son after Life is a Miracle. That's an original name. I guess you know that.
Well, yeah, Liam's a good Irish name as well.
That's true. I do have a friend from Ireland, and his son's name is similar. I know it doesn't have an L. It's I something. That's a good point. That's a good point. You know, you really are a unique individual on this planet. Are you full-blooded Irish?
Yeah, I am actually,
Okay, so you ended up in Australia. What age did you end up in Australia?
I know I was born in Australia. My four grandparents were Irish and came to Australia in the 20th century, mostly after the war. So I'm second generation Australian. So I was born and raised in Australia.
Wow. And then you moved to Thailand. And, you know, we're talking about several times on the broadcast that we do here on Wednesdays, that the accents, I hope we don't all lose our accents. I know that I've traveled around the country and some of the world, and people, they cannot believe that my roots actually go back to a farm in Mississippi. Now, do you believe that I can fall back into that accent?
I'm sure you could. Yeah.
Oh yes, get me on the phone with my blood sister and or my first cousin, and I can, you know. But you have a unique accent, and I really like that. So we want to start. I was reading and researching everything that you participate in there in Thailand, and I am amazed. I keep saying this, man, but one of my favorite quotes in the Urantia book is, you can do several things as easily as one if you leave yourself out. I keep saying that, but there's so much meaning and value. And how did you come about coming to northern Thailand?
Well, this journey really began at a Urantia conference, actually, in Sydney, 2006, the UAI conference. That was a big international conference. It was my first international conference, and I went there on my own. Yildo, who's my wife, is a Dutch lady. We were living in Melbourne at the time, so I went and attended this conference, and during that conference, there was a fellow known probably to some of your listeners, a guy called Mark Bloomfield, who gave an impassioned speech about the Free Schools project that he'd been working on, and that Sue Tennant and Saskia Ravuri and others were committed to, and Robert Conrad in Australia. And Mark gave quite a powerful presentation about that project. And he was based in Thailand at the time, and prior to that, he'd set up the Free Schools in India with Sister Crescent. So it's a remarkable program, service project coming from the readership. And Mark was looking to return to Africa at the time, so he put out a call for volunteers to come and replace him, the work he was doing in northern Thailand, which was working in the Hill Tribe villages running non-formal schools or informal education village schools. And it was a very powerful moment. It was a clear direction for me that this is something that we should do and an opportunity. So I rang Yildo and I said, we've got to go to Thailand. And at that stage, we were just going through the process of building a house. We were two days away from signing the contracts to build a ridiculous kind of suburban home. And Yildo had been looking at taps and the curtains, and, you know, to her great credit, she quickly said, okay, let's go. So that's what brought us here in the first place.
Wow. Well, you know, she's a very good friend of mine. I've known her a very, very long time. I don't know the gentleman. I've never met him. I'm sure I have, but my consciousness, I don't recall being around him. And I know I've seen pictures of him as far as he used to put some posts in through email. And speaking of posts, would you please give a plug for Facebook? Because Lisa Farmer, who's trying to call in today, commented that, for example, your child being born was what she called a Facebook event, that we all enjoyed it. We were all, it was like, yay. And I just love that. And I was just at a meeting at the foundation in Chicago for a conference. It was a very powerful study group conference for, I'm going to use the term facilitators. We're still discussing that because Ben, if you use the word leader with Urantia readers, you do need a leader, but you need somebody at the helm. But sometimes Urantia readers can go, whoa, you're not going to be my leader, right?
Yeah.
If you've ever sat in study groups, you understand that. Steve McIntosh.
I think facilitator is a great word. I think it's a fantastic word.
Which one?
Facilitator.
I like facilitator, but we'll see what the group consciousness is, because I've always sensed that and felt that I was a facilitator rather than a leader. And when I have been a manager in top management, I've been a manager of managers. And I told them while I was there that my model was servant leadership, and which really, if you read any of his books, that they're modeled on the life and teachings of Jesus, the way Jesus facilitated, encouraged, uplifted. So give your plug for Facebook, Ben. How long have you been on that social network?
Well, look, I'm happy to give a talk Facebook up. It's been a huge part of our growth and success over here with the projects that we do. The foundation projects, the Monk for a Month program, is marketed almost solely through Facebook. And we'll talk about that. There have been over 100 people come and visit us from all over the world to come to this northern remote village in Thailand to do that program, and most of them have found us on Facebook. So in terms of connecting people and bringing like-minded people together, it's an incredible, powerful tool. Like anything, it can be used for a range of things, some of them profound, some of them profane, some of them just plain silly. But in terms of, you know, the potency of what it can be, what it can mean in terms of connecting people around the world, it's phenomenal. And if it's used well, and if it's done wisely, it can be, unprecedented meanings for connecting people and bringing people together.
Well, it really is, and people don't realize how, I'm going to use the word intuitive, that it is, that if you've done any software application, I was telling somebody the other day, I said, when it comes to Facebook, anybody that's a little bit older and remembers the days of WordPerfect. By chance, do you remember that before we had Windows?
I know the name.
Yeah, and see, we had the first Apple, the first IBM PC, the first Speak and Spell. That was a prototype from TI Instruments here in Dallas, Plano. I think they're in Plano. People thought we were just out to lunch. Why would you have two personal computers? And, you know, that Speak and Spell was the first voice-activated computer. I've often said our son went on an airplane with the first laptop. And we were on, I used the first PageMaker, which evolved into InDesign. And Facebook is a piece of cake when it comes to that. And people that say they don't want to use Facebook, that's fine, if they're extremely, but they can be very linear, sequential, and you can get information out there so quickly, because using strictly emails can be pretty cumbersome, and you can choose what you want to partake of, right, Ben?
Well, that's right, and one of the best stories I can tell you about Facebook is another gentleman who was at the Urantia conference in Sydney in 2006, Oscar. Let me just get his name right and tell you this story, Anne, because this is really poignant. Oscar Morales Guevara is his name, a young Urantia book reader, and connected with him in Sydney and then hadn't had much to do with him for a couple of years. The next time I saw him, he was in a photo, and he was in the photo with Prince Charles and Sergey Brin, the founder of Google. And I thought, well, Oscar's obviously had a pretty interesting couple of years, so I looked further into it. He had used Facebook to create a movement in his native, my mind's gone blank for his actual, the FARC. Where are the FARC from? Which country? That's Colombia, right? So
yes,
he created a Facebook page, No More FARC, or a million voices against the FARC in Spanish. And he created the Facebook page or group, I think he started with, just absolutely took off in Colombia and around the world, and there were people took to the streets. Once you've got a Facebook group, you can create events that are associated with it. And it was accredited as being a major happening in the relations of the FARC in the Colombian society, that people were willing to stand up and talk out against them on this social networking site. And there were, in cities around the world, people were organized to take to the streets, and in Colombia as well. And it actually was a tipping point that really changed the way that the FARC are able to operate in Colombia. And since then, Oscar's been receiving awards from the U.S. State Department and Google, and is now part of a group that works with social enterprise and new media. So the Facebook group, you can look it up, 1 million against the FARC on Facebook. There's hundreds of thousands of people on that group, started by a Urantia book reader. And this is another testament to the great
power. Oh, my goodness. And I also want to just give a huge virtual round of applause to Blog Talk Radio. I have watched and observed them for 2 years since Saturday began. It's been rare for me to miss a show. And I've observed how they've improved. Their technical advisors are always there for us. The sound has improved, and I want to kudos them that now when I do go back and listen, I don't like to watch myself and edit a video. And there's been times I've been forced to edit myself listening. But the good thing about radio, if the people have never done radio, you have a headset that gives you a constant feedback on your voice. So you have a reflection immediately of how you're sounding. It's like when you're a public speaker and you have the feedback speakers turned towards you. If you don't do that, it's very difficult to speak in a large auditorium. So people that don't understand that. So they also have wonderful advertising, the advertising spot right before each broadcast now. And people say, well, they shouldn't have advertising. Well, how do they expect them to pay the people that are sitting? And I'm sure there's somebody listening to us right now. They have to. Now, can you imagine how many people that takes? And they're constantly responding to our emails. So it's just marvelous. Okay, we have two callers. Let's see who this is. He may not be able to talk. I think I know who this is. And then also we have another caller. Ah, I know who that is. You're going to like this caller. I was about to text him. And we'll bring both of them in. Okay, 323, can you talk right now? You're on the air.
Hi, Ann. How you doing?
It's Pato. Ben, have you ever met Pato?
No, not in person. Hey, Pato, brother, how you going?
And I'm going to bring in the other guest. I think I know who it is. 714, you're on the air.
Hi, Ann, how are you?
Ah, Dave Tucker. Okay, we have Ben, Pato, and Dave. So, Pato.
Hi, everyone.
Hi, Dave.
Blessings.
And Pato.
Yes.
How about that? You have a child named after your song.
I'm very, very happy and impressed.
Live.
That's nice.
Live.
That's very nice.
I've heard you sing that in person several times, and it's very stirring.
Yes, it's a favorite for a lot of people.
And thank you for taking the time, because I know you're driving on an 8-hour trip right now.
Yeah, we're on a pretty bumpy road right now, going through Newark, New Jersey, going through the Turnpike.
And where are you headed?
We are headed to Harrisonburg, Virginia.
Wow.
Virginia.
Wow. Well, our daughter lives...
I love your work, Pato. I never connected with you before, but followed you on the internet and obviously your stuff on MySpace. And I love that song. I love the lyrics of it. And the other piece that you've got is Christ on Religion, which I listen to regularly. And it's just awesome. I just think it's fantastic what you're doing and how you're doing it. Really big fan. Big fan.
Pato, I said earlier that I made a comment about one of my very favorite quotes: you can do several things as easily as one. And I have observed this in you for so many years, and people don't realize what it takes. How do you, if I drive, I have driven 24 hours without stopping. I made that comment on my Facebook page with Buddhist monks, because you have to get them fed by noon every day, this particular sect of Buddhism. So how do you do that, Pato? How do you keep... I know your age. I'm almost 63, and you're behind me. You're just a kid. But I'm not sure how old you are now. I'm never embarrassed to tell my age. How do you do that, Pato? Is Pato with us? Did we lose him? He may have to call back. See, he's on a cell phone. Pato? Oh, here he comes again. Pato?
Yeah, I dropped out for a while. I'm back now.
I was asking, how do you do so many things at one time and keep your energy level up? How do you do that, Pato? Because I said, how do you do it? Now you're on an 8-hour drive, and I know you do a lot of the driving, Pato.
Yes, I'm just about to do the next shift, actually.
So how did you do that?
I'm not really sure. I just know that, you know, it seems as though, the more responsibility you take on, if you just put it in the Father's hands, you know, it just has a way of working out. You know, I've never been afraid to take responsibilities, never been afraid to multitask. I find it very hard to say no to people who ask for my help or ask for my time. But so far, thank God, everything seems to always work out without me, you know, crashing or, you know, not getting something done because something else is pulling at me. So, you know, I just give thanks. I have an energy, you know, to live and to serve. And I think that desire keeps me energized.
Wow. Ben, do you agree with that? Because we have young Dave listening. Dave, you're 30 now, right?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
And you're learning. Now, you know Pato personally, right?
Yeah, I met him at ICOA. It was wonderful, actually. That was my first time meeting any UB readers aside from the gentleman who introduced me to the book. So it was amazing. I was on a spiritual high, you must say, for at least a good couple months.
Well, Ben, how would you please tell Pato, I know you told me you had a dream or something when your son, right before your
okay,
son.
Okay, so Liam's now 8 months old, so this is going back about a year when we were going through the process of, we knew it was going to be a boy, so we were throwing names around, but we hadn't really got serious about it. And then I'd listened to the song, and as I said, I love the song, I love the lyrics. And I was kind of in bed, had it in my head, and it came to me that life is a miracle, which is so true, that it's spelt Liam. And so I went to Yildo, and I said, I think we should call the boy Liam. And she actually had Liam on her short list of about 3 or 4 names, unbeknownst to me. So it was from then on, it was really, you know, bingo, boy's going to be called
That's
Liam.
Nice. I never thought about it like that before.
Isn't that amazing?
I'll put a photo of him on your. I think we're friends on Facebook. There you go, there's Facebook again. But I'll put a photo of him, Pato, on your Facebook page so you can at least know what he looks like.
Awesome. Thank you.
I think that's incredible, Pato. Now you have to write another song. So you have to go to Thailand, I'm speaking that over you, and meet this young man who has a great destiny in front of him, and then write another song. Pato, how many are you planning to go the 50 states again this year?
Yes, we are.
Wow. And you say you're coming through Texas in November?
Yes, we are.
And that's wonderful. And I know
right now we're on our way to Virginia, Ohio, Wisconsin, Nebraska, Illinois.
Wow.
Minneapolis.
So many places right now.
Wow. Wow, that is just amazing. Totally amazing. Are you planning to go to any, there's so many conferences, retreats in the next 3 months that, you know, there's just so much that you can do and so much money to go around.
Yeah, I am going to the United Durantia Family Conference in Montreal.
Oh, that's wonderful. I don't think I'm going to be able to go, Pato, because of some things that are happening with the Parliament of World Religions. I got an email, and the meetings are right then because people are flying in, so it makes sense they would do it. Well, I'm not going to be able to go, but that's okay. It's going to be a wonderful conference. And I'm losing money because I cannot go, but, you know, what do you do? Because this parliament is a critical, and we're honored to be known as the Urantia Movement inside that framework since 1993. And so that's an honor. Now, Dave, I'm trying to talk. Y'all continue. Dave, would you please tell us how you came to Thailand? And I'm going to be texting Guard Jameson. He wants to call in. So please go ahead.
Are you talking to me, Ann, or to Dave?
Yes, to you, Ben. I'm sorry, did I say
okay.
Dave?
No, that's okay. Okay. So that's how we came to Thailand, was at the... By the way, Pato, thanks for ringing in. It's really special and a very cool connection. Thanks for arranging that, Ann. That's touching. We responded to this opportunity that was presented by Free Schools, originally presented by Mark Bloomfield and then backed up by Sue Tennant and the Free Schools World Literacy Team, to come as two volunteers to run their Free Schools projects here in Thailand. Now, originally that program was set up here in northern Thailand as a strategic way to get in the back of China in preparation for the seeding mission. Many of you might know that Mark Bloomfield also, apart from doing the Free Schools, has spent a decade seeding Urantia books around the world. So Sue and Mark had a plan to get in through Thailand and Burma into China, but the Chinese translation didn't go as planned, so that hasn't happened. But that was the original reason for being here. But in serendipitously, in the north, there's a great need, or there was a great need for those projects, in the sense that there's a lot of hill tribes, villages here that had fallen behind in their education. Thai is not their first language. They miss out on a lot of the opportunities given to Thai-speaking kids. So these schools were basically Thai language schools, extra curriculum and homework for kids either who weren't going to school or who were in school but struggling because of the language situation. And the other thing, and this is what led us to be doing what we're doing here now, is the Shan people from Burma. And Shan state is 5.5 million people. It's an incredibly, it's the biggest state in Burma. It's the biggest ethnic group after the Burmans themselves in Burma. And because of the persecution and the war and the oppression that's happening in their homeland, there are hundreds of thousands of migrants living around northern Thailand, over 1 million in Thailand in total. And so in this area here, we're 15 kilometers from, 10 miles from the border with Burma. We're here in Phang, and there are tens of thousands of informal workers working here on the orange farms and the rice farms and the other agricultural projects. So again, they don't speak Thai. They don't have any papers. They're an incredibly vulnerable group. They're at risk of being sent back to Burma at any stage, and their lives here are incredibly difficult, but they'd rather be here than back in Shan State, which says a lot about the situation over there. So some of the free schools were Shan schools, and it was from that experience that we then, particularly Yildo originally, really started researching who are these people, how come I've never heard of them, what's going on in Burma, and that was the entry point for us to get engaged with what we're doing and to create Blood Foundation. But the first reason for being here was we were volunteering for free schools, and we had a great 10 months, best part of a year, traveling around in our scooters through the mountains here, servicing these schools, paying the teachers, making sure they had supplies, and it was a wonderful, lovely time. In the end, that project was handed over to a local NGO who are still running it, who are still managing it, and we then launched our own projects, which are more focused on the situation in Burma and the migrants that are living in this area here.
So do you actually teach as well, or do you just support the teachers?
I'm not a teacher, Pato. My wife is. But because the main purpose for these guys is to teach Thai, our role is really a facilitator, I guess, again, or a manager, I suppose. Setting projects up, making sure they're funded, making sure they're working. The local people are doing it all themselves. The teachers are the local Shan people in our projects. So they really run the projects at a day-to-day level. All we're really doing is helping to set them up and to maintain the direction and strategy, and obviously to find the money as well to run them.
So what is the goal that you're trying to achieve with, as far as the side project to help the Shan people?
So there's two. We have a two-pronged strategy. One is the guys that are here living on this side of the border. Our primary goal is to skill them with Thai language. Because not being able to speak is the one thing that makes them more vulnerable than anything else. They can't defend themselves to the authorities. They can't argue or defend themselves to their employers. They get paid, obviously, a pittance to work in pretty dangerous environments because of the chemicals that are used. So our project is really very simple. It's just to give them Thai language skills, which means that they can not only have better options in life, but they can then enter the Thai education system, even as adults. And the Thai system is good if you can speak the language. Once they're in the Thai education system, they have opportunities to get increased status and paperwork, and all the way up to citizenship as a whole series of steps. So the more Thai they can speak, the better off they are. So our projects are really just focused. We have a school, which is a full-time school with about 20 young kids, and we have other projects which are adult education, a mix of that and children. The other thing that we do that we're involved in is the Learn to Live program, where we train monks from Shan State. Shan State is 92% Theravada Buddhist, and the greatest resource for that entire, you know, huge area is the Buddhist network, the Sangha. So we're training the monks in community development to deliver education services and projects deep inside Shan State. We work with a couple of other NGOs doing that. There are some areas in the conflict zone where primary education is at 4%, which is abysmal. It would be one of the lowest anywhere in the world. The UN Millennium Development Goals are trying to achieve universal primary education by 2015, so you can see that, you know, it's a big struggle to get anywhere close to that in Shan State in Burma. But by training the monks, who are already, in many cases, running their own schools, but they don't have the knowledge how to teach, they don't know how to run lesson plans, they don't know how to transfer information that's of a secular nature, such as mathematics and language, history, geography. They're obviously skilled at teaching Buddha, Dharma, and Pali language, which is their ancient sacred language. So we train monks and abbots in a training program to deliver development skills and knowledge, which is education, community health, and also now economic development. So that allows us to actually have some impact at the cause, while here in this area we're really dealing with the effects.
That's a big project.
Isn't that amazing? I'm just...
That's a big undertaking.
Well, you know, in order to do that, once again, you gentlemen, there's a quote in the papers about, you know, how, number one, the team effort, right, about the load-pulling spirit.
Uh-huh.
And you've engaged these people in a very wonderful, meaningful way, both of you. Pato, I'll ask you, could you do what you do without the team?
No, not at all.
And you took time. I really admired this, and I want to speak this about you, over you, that you had a wonderful band before. They were very young and vibrant and moving forward with their careers. And you, out of a prayerful place and reflections, you determined that it would be better for them and you for you to begin a new band. And I mean, I have watched that over this time. When did you do that, please? And that was a great challenge, Pato.
Yes, it was a great challenge.
How many are in your band, your new band?
There is 7 musicians.
And are they all right there with you right now inside the motorhome?
Yeah, they're all traveling together.
Isn't that something? I've tried to figure out where everybody sleeps.
Traveling together on the bumpy road.
They're on the bumpy road.
Believe me, everybody is very comfortable.
Wow. Well, that's because you have the spirit with you, Pato.
Uh-huh.
And Ben, I'm speaking for you, but I know they have an open door in Thailand. Am I correct?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if you can get yourselves to Chiang Mai, which is the big regional capital in the north, we'll come and pick you up and show you around and absolutely give you the royal treatment.
I wanted to ask you, is English widely spoken in Thailand?
No, it's not. Certainly not in the rural areas part. So in Bangkok, there are, you know, the middle class and the educated people have some English, but up here in the rural areas, it's pretty rare. One of the things we do, we have a volunteer program bringing foreigners to come and teach English in the schools. So that's, you know, it's a drop in the ocean, but it's something. Go ahead.
Have you got to learn both languages then, Burmese and the other?
I couldn't hear that, Anne.
Say that again, Pato, please.
I was asking you, have you had to learn...
Oh, the language. Have you learned the language?
Yeah, I mean Thai classes. When we, I'm a little sheepish about that. When we first arrived, we weren't sure how long we were going to stay, so we didn't throw ourselves into learning Thai. Also, we were working with hill tribes and working with Shan people, so it wasn't a clear-cut thing. But yes, now I'm engaged in Thai lessons, and it's a tough language, but we're struggling on with it. It's very important that we can learn to speak it.
So an interpreter is very important to be with you.
Yes, it is important to learn. And you know what? We were with, you know, Pato, I mentioned the lady from Mexico City that I was with at that study group conference.
Uh-huh.
And she taught us a technique to learn another language. Y'all ready? I mean, she sat down, and in 3 minutes, we had it. She has multiple language in her repertoire. You take Baroque music, you know, like Bach, that's, you know, the, and of course, Pato, I know you can do your own music, but where it's that same beat of the that style. And she learns 100 words a day in another language. You have the music playing in the background on a sheet of paper. She took a napkin, and I don't know Spanish that well, but she would write the English word, table. Then she wrote the Spanish word for table. Then she wrote, again, the English word on the same line. And then she wrote it again. And she would record it with the music behind her, table. I'm going to say L table. I don't know what it is. Table, and it's 3 seconds that you're listening to the music. L, okay, table, L table, table. Then you wait 6 seconds and you repeat it. The next word, chair, L chair. I don't know. And I'm telling you, she learns 100 words a day. She is multilingual, and now I understand why. There it is. Now, you pay hundreds of dollars to learn that technique. And she, you can find this on the web. But you could create a Baroque style or listen, you know, Bach, for example, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So, Ben, I just wanted to tell you that. And she said there are people that she knows that, that steps it up to 500 words.
Wow.
And do y'all know what I...
About 3 or 4 at the moment, so anything's appreciated, and I'll look that up.
And do you know that one thing I do every night, there's a timer set on my CD player, and I have it either with the Urantia book on tape or Pato. I'm looking forward to your new CD, and you need to tell people about it. I listen to you. And I have a timer set for like 3 hours sometimes. So I drift off to sleep. And if I'm going to have a particular study, because this is a topical study group, I will play those papers. And if I'm going to be, there's something about Jesus, Pato, I listen to your tape. Would you tell us about your latest adventure with this?
Oh, the Words of Christ 3?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, your copy should arrive today or tomorrow, actually.
Yes, I'm very thankful for that. I apologize. Like I told, I will go ahead and announce this, that I had to shut down my post office box, and I guess I shouldn't have done that, but they were supposed to forward it. A lot of people don't realize that the reason I had the post office box number 911 was because the first Parliament of World Religions in Chicago, 1893, was held on 9/11, and that's a very marked, you know. And well, prior to 9/11, nobody thought anything about it. But then I got hate mail and all kinds of stuff where people were going to, you know, do all kinds of weird things. So I've tried to go back to another, but I believe I'm gonna step up to the plate and renew it. Because, you know what, my reason for doing it was because of the Parliament of World Religions in 1893. So I shouldn't let that kind of thing stop me. So, so that's good. It's funny, you know, when guests are listening, and some people listen and we don't even see them on the chat room, there, it just so happens that their number came in, guest number 666.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just a coincidence. I find that quite interesting.
I'd prefer 606 if I had a shot.
Yeah. But you know what? A topical discussion right there. Young Dave Tucker, you still with us?
All day.
Do you know why that was written, what that number really means?
No, I'm oblivious to the origin of it.
Do either of you gentlemen know why it's in the Bible? Of course, the Revelation book tells us it's the mark of the beast. It's the mark. What is the mark of the beast in Revelation? They didn't say that in the Revelation papers. But all the scholars will tell you that that was a term. The mark of the beast was the lower nature. And
yeah.
A lot of the old versions, I have Bibles that go back over 100, in the 1800s. They're covered and laid flat in my cabinets downstairs. The number is 606, gentlemen. It is not 666. That was modified in a lot of the translations. But what is the number? Why is it 606?
Well, we're the 606th inhabited planet, according to the Urantia papers.
Right. And now someone is saying on the board is for Julius Caesar. I don't know what would he, you're going to have to explain that, brother. His name, brother, that's another brother. Does anybody know what he's talking about there?
Is it Augustus, Augustus Caesar, right?
Right. Was that 666 for him?
You know, you get a lot of people having different ideas about what it actually represents, obviously, but a lot of scholars think that John of Patmos wrote it at the time of great persecution, and that the beast was referring to the Roman crown, I guess. So that at that stage, it was Augustus.
Augustus. Oh, that's interesting. And like I said, the Urantia book does not mention 666. And Brother Dave, I appreciate that comment that. That is a normal animal human nature. And Pato, or one of you gentlemen, that are whoever wants to approach this, now this is a topical thing. I have an album on my Facebook called The Creatures That Possess Five Senses. Well, it's all animals. And there are adjutant mind spirits. And it's interesting that once we move beyond the animal nature, we are to partake of something called wisdom, then worship. Am I correct?
Yes. Yes.
So which one of you would like to explain the adjutant mind spirits?
I'm not sure if I could explain it.
Okay.
Clearly. I have a good understanding of them.
Well, I'd rather you bring forth your understanding rather than just throwing out quotes from the Urantia book, Pato.
Mm-hmm.
So how would you describe partaking of the adjutant mind spirits?
I think as far as I can remember, the five adjutant mind spirits are the levels of awareness. I guess one of them is understanding. One of them is courage. Anybody else want to chip in here?
Yes, I'm actually asking somebody to find it in the papers. David, do you have access to...
Oh, yeah, I'm on it right now.
Okay.
I'm trying
okay,
to find
thank
it.
Thank you, Dave. Yes. I know it's intuition, and I observe. I learned so much from our dog, and we have two cats, and one of them, by the way, is named Pocahontas, and we call her the forest cat. And now we have a pet fox, gentlemen. St- Steve was outside yesterday in the backyard over the weekend while I was in Chicago. He's making my basketball court, Pato. I don't know if you shoot basketball, but you have an open invitation.
Okay, I think one of the spirits is...
But that fox, we're observing those five adjutants in that fox. He's become a pet now. Go ahead, Pato.
Yeah, one of them is instincts.
Right.
Natural instincts.
I've got all seven of them here. The first is...
Would you give the reference, please, in the Urantia papers? Brother Dave?
Oh, yes. The first is the spirit of intuition.
No, sir, the reference, so that people who are listening to the archives can find it.
Oh, I apologize. It's paper 36, paragraph 5, section 6. Oh, no, I'm sorry. Section 5, paragraph 6.
And do you mind telling me the page number in the original printing?
I'm looking on Truth's Book search engine,
okay.
I don't have page numbers, unfortunately. I'm sorry.
Okay.
But paper 35, and like I said, section 5 is the seven adjutant mind spirits. And it's the sixth paragraph where it lists all seven of them. The first is the spirit of intuition. The second is the spirit of understanding. The third is the spirit of courage. The fourth is the spirit of knowledge. The fifth is the spirit of counsel. Mm. And the sixth is the spirit of worship. The seventh is the spirit of wisdom. And it's my understanding that we share all five of the first five adjutant mind spirits with the animals. The only two that they cannot share with us are six, the spirit of worship, and seven, the spirit of wisdom. And that's what separates us from animal. However, we still are lowly creatures, aren't we?
Yes, and let me tell you, sometimes when that dog saw me when I got home after that long trip, she had a look in her eye of worship because she wanted to go for a walk. And I will tell you, that fox and that forest cat gets along just fine. Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Fox won't hurt you. Pato, Ben, do you see people functioning on an animal level in Thailand?
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah. Hi. It's my shift right now.
Oh, Pato, would you sing just a little bit of Universal Love, just a few bars?
Okay.
Go for it.
All righty. There's a vibe in the air. I can feel it everywhere. Universal love. There's a vibe in the air. I can feel it everywhere. Universal love. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, 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 universal love and cosmic citizen.
Wow. I love it. Well, you know, you do our entrance, our entree every week, except this week we did Life is a Miracle. So right there, you're going to redo it so you can say, on cosmic citizen. And, Pacho, I want to ask you, I know you got to drive, but on your CD, Destination Paradise, that gentleman that does that with that low voice, who is that? Number 5, I believe it is.
Say that again.
On your CD, Destination Paradise, there's one song with one of your friends, and he has a very low voice.
Yes. His name is, I think it's Rex, Dr. Rex.
I love that. If you're ever with him in the near future, I'd love for him to say, "Oh, I'm Cosmic Citizen." I just think that'd be so cool. I just love it. He's got one of the most remarkable voices I've ever heard, and that is number 5, isn't it?
Yes.
Pacho, thank you. We are now sending forth, you already have a lot of angels around you and all kinds of, and so safe driving.
Thank
and
Pato, thanks for ringing in, and I'd like to just to invite you, you ever get a break in that busy schedule of yours and you're looking for a little rest and relaxation or maybe something different, then please come and visit us up in Chiang Mai, up on the border here in Burma for a few days or for as long as you like. It'd be amazing to have
all
you.
Right. All right. I will keep that in mind, bro. Get Anne to give you my email info, and then you stay in touch with me.
Okay, I will. I will, for sure.
All right. Love you guys.
Pato, love you. Bye.
Thank you.
Bye. You know why I say love you, Ben? Because I know it's something I'm sure he'll end up writing a song. There's three O's in it. I serendipitously decided a year and a half ago to write something every day for 40 days when Jesus made those great decisions. And so it was, and I had a limited list because I just people that I knew that might be interested. And then people slowly began to come in, and then people began to write themselves. And right toward the end, something hit me, Ben. Jesus was, and serendipitously, that's when Pato was making drastic changes. And the day it ended, he ended up in Arlington, and that was already planned with him. How about that? Arlington, Texas. Only one objective. You see it? O-O-O. Only one objective.
Good.
And
I like it.
And so if you ever see me do a sign off to him in the chat room or in Facebook, I will put a little L. I'll put a little L and then caps O-O-O, then little V-E. And so that's our little signal back and forth. So I just find that interesting. Well, I think we lost young Dave. I'm not sure what happened to him. And I'm going to have to, also Suzanne Kelly wanted to call in, and she emailed me last night and texted me, so I'll have to find out what's going on with her. Would you talk about Monk for a month while I, it's interesting how you're doing all this multitasking. You know, the Spirit will help you. I have a book laying in my lap. The monk for the month. Would you talk about that, please?
Sure. So one of the things we were doing was my wife Yula was teaching English in one of the temples, and a lot of the temples here have schools associated with them that have young novices in them. So we had formed a relationship with a particular temple here, just in this town where we are, and we noticed that there was a tradition of men taking time out to join the temple and become monks for periods of time from a week up to 3 months. Women would also spend time in the temple, but it's a different system. So we thought, wouldn't it be an interesting opportunity to open that up to foreigners, sincere seekers who are interested in Buddhism. Obviously, there's a lot of interest in Buddhism in the West. And so we approached the abbot, who's an extraordinary man. He's a PhD from India and an extremely broad thinker, and approached him with the idea of creating a program that would allow foreigners to come to the temple to study Buddhism, to meditate, to enter the experience, have a cultural exchange, adventure, and if they wanted to take the 10 precepts of a novice monk. So they're not becoming full-blown monks, which would take 6 or 12 months of preparation. They're becoming novice monks. They still shave their hair and their eyebrows and wear the orange robes and go on the sacred alms rounds every morning. It's a very profound experience. And we've had people from all over the world do it. We've had Jewish, Christian. We've had a lot of secular people coming or exploring a kind of spirituality of Buddhism, which is perhaps softer than what they think some of the other faiths are that they've been exposed to who are looking for things. We've had Rastafarians, and we've had Muslims, and we've had people from every background come, men and women, experience this program. And it's been an incredible coming together. And again, this is the teamwork, where we really feel like we're a part of this program. The abbot is obviously, his blessing and his involvement is critical to it, otherwise we can't operate there. There's a foreigner living here who is a devout Buddhist who was teaching them in English. We provide all the materials for them to learn about Theravada Buddhism and to practice and to have this experience. And while they're here, we also expose them to what we do as a foundation, as Blood Foundation, working with the migrants and with the Shan people and with the Burma situation in general. So it's a great opportunity for people to come. They're looking for some spiritual development themselves, or they're looking to experience Buddhism from the inside, and they have the opportunity to be exposed to these other projects and other ideas and service-orientated opportunities. So it's just been a real great coming together of a lot of different forces and factors, and it's continues to be a great program. We have a steady flow of people coming through. There's usually a couple of people in the temple. There's a couple of young Dutch girls in the temple at the moment who emailed me before they come to make sure they could watch the World Cup, which there's no precept against that. So we get a great array of really interesting characters, and from that, these people that come and then get engaged in what we're doing, and many of them have then gone on and stayed connected to us and volunteered their services or their skills or done some fundraising or continue to do that from having come and experienced that program. So it's been a wonderful thing to be a part of, and it's quite unique. There's not a similar program that we're aware of. So what it does is it exposes us to an international audience and allows us to portray the themes that we're really interested in, which obviously Buddhism is the jumping-off point for these guys, but it certainly goes into a lot of possibilities, interfaith work, development work, social enterprise, and a whole bunch of other stuff, which is, I think, really appealing and captivating for a lot of people, young and old. We've had people in their 70s come from North America to do the program, quite a number actually, and obviously younger people and the whole range. So Monk for Month's been an incredible thing to be a part of, and we've met some absolutely awesome people, and we continue to build the team around this idea of bringing people to the field here. Being right in the north, on the edge of Burma, on the edge of the border, it's got a bit of a frontier feel to it. It's very different to being in other parts of Thailand or in other parts of the developed world. So coming here, even the bus ride from Chiang Mai is a three-hour, windy through the mountains kind of trip. So you really have the feeling when you get here that you're on the edge of something. And I think that's a really important part of it. This program wouldn't work in a big city or somewhere down on the beach in Thailand. It works well here. And it's giving people a chance to reflect, to take time out. Programs are for 2, 3, or 4 weeks. And people really, when you enter the temple, you're in a very different space, very sacred space, and you can feel that pretty much straight away. So our guest book is full of some of the most extraordinary testimonials from people who write these incredible experience and life-changing experiences that they're having. And that's really a testimony to the temple environment, to the novices that they're meeting, these young boys from often from underprivileged backgrounds, and of course being exposed to the great need and the difficulties that the Burmese migrants from Shan State are experiencing. Is for many tourists and travelers, it's quite a unique experience to really have an intimate and internalized experience of that. So it's been great. It's been absolutely amazing, and it's a privilege to be a part of.
Well, I told you in a private conversation to prepare for the show, and we folks, we don't rehearse this broadcast. I find that if you do too much rehearsing, you lose the fluid motion. However, we do plan. It takes a lot of time to plan these shows to do it right. And I told you, I have partaken of the Eightfold Path at times where you stay up all night, and then when I traveled, it was an honor to escort all those, many Buddhist monks around the United States, and they experienced things that they'd never experienced before. They had special permission because we just completed building the temple, and that is here in Texas, Ben.
Right.
You asked me.
Right.
I haven't had time to respond to all those, and yeah. I know your favorite pictures.
Great photos, by the way.
Thank you. And they go way back. I guess you can tell some of them are scanned from way, way back.
Yeah.
And they do. When they say, y'all come now, there's a slight accent there because I did teach them English. I do teach English as a second language. And I'm going to approach it totally different now since Lisa taught me that technique. And it's quite an experience. And in traveling, I took on the role. I wore all white to honor, and I learned a lot about abiding by there, how many laws do they abide by? How many rules do those...
Full-blown monks have 227 precepts.
227 precepts.
For a fully ordained monk, yeah. The guys that... the girls go to 8 precepts, as you've said, and the 8 precepts are basically the 5 precepts are not to kill, not to steal, not to lie, no sexual misconduct, and not to partake of drugs or alcohol. So that's the basic 5 precepts. And the next 3 are not to wear adornments, not to listen or
not to wear what?
Entertainment.
I'm sorry, not to
adornments,
wear
adornments, necklaces,
right,
piercings,
right,
that sort of thing. Not to attend entertainments and not to eat after midday. Of course, that's the big one in Theravada Buddhism.
Right. Now, that, would you, I have my take on why this happened over the centuries in this particular sect of Buddhism. Number one, they're not married. Now, the Tibetan monks are married. A lot of people, they need to understand that. But in this sect of Buddhism, and the color of the robes are different, and even inside this particular sect, they are different. I honor those rules, and I came to a place of understanding why the eating, why, and listen, I totally understand why they cannot touch a female. You learn how to deal with that. In fact, I was with the Lama, who had never met me, and he was from China recently, and he handed me his camera. Do you know what I did without even thinking? I went underneath him, underneath his hands, like cut my hands. Because you learn how to throw, to drop, and it's just a real subtle thing. I can understand that about not touching the, you know, if you're going to live a celibate lifestyle. Can you, and I'm sure you've observed that all these years.
Well, yeah, a lot of the rules are about giving up your attachments. The monks aren't working in the fields like other people are, so that they should survive on 2 meals a day, being breakfast, and they eat lunch at about 11, 11:30. So it's about moderation and about discipline. And, yeah, it certainly seems to work very well in this context. And it does, I think, separate those who choose to ordain from the lay people. Well, it's a rich, rich culture and an amazing tradition, really.
By the way, you had asked me about my abbot friend, and I do call him a forest monk because he really is a forest monk. I don't know if I pronounce this right, L-O-E-I, province.
Louis,
that,
yeah.
It's around the border of Thailand and Laos, right?
Uh-huh, yep.
And, yep, so I can, the Wong Sa Pong District.
Uh-huh.
So how far are
you? I'll get these off you. I'd love to go and visit him.
I really need you to because I'm concerned about his health. He's approaching 70. And the last 3 times I called, the monk that answered couldn't speak English, and I only know Sawadi Kap, you know. When I'm with a lot of Thai people for an extended period of time, I laugh at the jokes. I laugh, you know, I know when there's something wrong. And I can't explain that. I never took formal lessons. So I find that interesting. You know, Lompi, Lompo, you know, Ajahn, Prajahn. You know, I understand that concept. Long Ta, I understand that. And so do you know what that's going to be like for him and me, for you to go and send him my best wishes?
No, I'd really like to. I'd really like to.
Well, he's remote, you know, and I'll email you the
photo of him in blessing the church you've got there from a while back, which I posted today. I thought it was a great image. And
well, that was an honor. The media was like, whoa, whoa, whoa. And did you look at the picture of him in the pulpit on my Facebook album?
Yep.
Did you see that gigantic orb right by his head? Look closely. There's a gigantic. I've never seen an orb that big. You know what I mean by an orb?
Yeah, yeah.
And you don't normally capture those with those old cameras of film. You do see them because digital is so boom. And those who have discernment and spiritual gifts of the Spirit see those all the time. They just don't, you know, the ones that are wise and mature don't talk about it. And, you know, I'm going to say something here, Ben, about, you know, we talked about 9/11 and security at airports. Do you know, of course, body language, demeanor, the way someone talks, yes. But do you know the most important thing for those security people to know and to walk in? First of all, every one of them need to move in the gifts of the Spirit. Do you know what I mean? There are nine. There are in Christianity. There are gifts in all the religions. The eyes are the window to the soul. When you look in someone's eyes and their forehead, you should always require people to show you their forehead and the way the mouth. But let's look at the eyes. You can look in someone's eyes, even far away. You know, if you're close enough where you. And you know what's going on with them. If they're telling the truth, if they're sincere, if they have the Spirit, or if they're of an animal nature. Totally, totally. So I would recommend, I'm putting this out on the airways because this goes out in an archive, that they need to train these people. I'm sure they do. But if you don't have the Spirit with you, you know, you're just doing it mechanically. And that will work to a degree. There's people that analyze eyes. And that's why I still like books. You know, if you look at a computer screen a lot, you know what's going to happen to your eyes, right? Even with the flat screens. It will, you know, there is a problem with eyesight as time goes by. And so I like the tactile environment of the books. Now, I want to go back to these Buddhist monks. So you were a monk for a year? I mean, for a month.
No. Well, it's called Monks for a Month. It's sort of a catchy title. But people can come 2 or 3 weeks is a sort of the minimum time if you want to ordain. A lot of people come to the program and they don't ordain. They just experience the teachings and the meditation and the environment and the cultural exchange, which even just as a cultural exchange, it's you know, very rich. So probably only 20-25% of people will go and ordain, either men or women. I did it quickly, Anne. I did it over a week because I'd been around the temple
in 1 week. Was that pretty traumatic for you to not eat afternoon until the next morning?
No, that was fine. That was fine. I absolutely loved it. I would have stayed longer, but I had so much going on. Yulda was 6 months pregnant at the time, and you know, we're running a foundation, so there was, you know, it was difficult to stay any longer, but I would have loved to. I really enjoyed the space and just not having to go anywhere or do anything or ring anybody or send anyone an email, and just to read the books and to meditate and to be there. It was, and time goes differently when you're in that sort of sacred space. So even though it was a week, it was long enough for me. I could have stayed longer, but it was very refreshing and very, very nourishing. And I think a lot of people, you know, getting that experience from going into this really other place. And so we're really fortunate to have an abbot who's allowing it to happen. It's something that, you know, we hope to continue steadily to grow. We don't want it to become too big. We just want it to maintain its genuineness and its...
I love that. And see, a lot of people don't... Now, this is going on within Buddhism, but what you've taken it to another level... Right, as far as people who are not going to become Buddhists, right?
No.
They can do this, and is that what
I
understood?
Oh, absolutely. It's not really about becoming Buddhist. It's about, I mean, this sort of goes into the whole interfaith kind of opportunity that's around now. I mean, this generation that we have with intercontinental travel and the internet and technology, we have a opportunity to explore different traditions and different faith traditions, different spiritual techniques. Without necessarily, you know, belonging wholly and solely to any particular one. This is something that I think the Buddhism's got a lot to teach. Vipassana, the meditation, is fantastic. The Eightfold Paths are sound. They're great. The precepts are, you know, faultless. So there's certainly a lot of richness to take out of it. Now, some people are coming and they are experiencing it and they're choosing to become Buddhist. Most people are coming and it's more self-development, personal development, learning about the heart of service and the opportunities that we have as individuals today to participate in this creation in a really unique and unprecedented way. So that's the biggest story, and it's happening within the Thai temple. But we're exposing them to ideas that perhaps are inherent in Buddhism, but are inherent in every religion, which is this idea of service, of perfection through service, and of fulfillment through service, and of development, self-development through service to others. And so that's really the heart of what we're wanting people to take from it, and that's what people are getting. So I think you could run this in any environment. We've looked at doing a program in an Islamic country. What's happening now in Western Europe particularly is the biggest clash of the age is secular Western Europe with the Islamic world. And we'd love to run a cultural exchange program in either Northern Africa or in perhaps in Turkey, where people would come and they would experience progressive, enlightened Islam taught well in a facilitated environment, looking at the beauty of that religion and the poetry and the architecture and the inspiration, the devotion, and really learning about what the other is thinking. And so this is really at the heart of it, is this idea of getting to know each other. And inside that, there's the possibilities for development of the individual, which are really profound. So people are coming and doing this program, and they're leaving, and they're making life-changing choices, which is really rewarding for us to be a part of it. And that's the stories we really want to be a part of, is the development of the individual, which then is leading to, you know, development of the whole. And so in a very small way, that's what we're doing at the temple.
Well, you know, it's so important for people to understand what I call the interdependence of community. I'm doing a series at a large Methodist church on world religions, and the whole purpose is that they're wanting to learn that sense of community from these other religions and to understand those religions. And
yep.
What's fascinating is they didn't understand why these monks depend on the community. My friend there, and I, we are supposed to go, my daughter and her lifetime gentleman mate, I don't know what you call that, I call him my son-in-love instead of son-in-law. They don't want to get married right now because of the industry they're in, the film industry, television. There's something to do with all that, you know, you have to be contracts and everything, but that's okay. They've made their commitment. There's been an informal ceremony. You don't have to go register at the courthouse, you know. And we're supposed to go. And therefore, we'll come see you. And of course, we're coming in December or January, right? We're not coming in July or August. We've had long conversations. I mean, you know, even on the phone. He leaves his temple every morning with his monks. I forgot how many are there right now. And they walk for miles with their bowls. Would you describe what that does for the community? Is it? Do I hear your baby, by the way?
That's the baby, yeah. I'm going to go.
I love it. I love it. Well, if you can do that, and it's fine to have the baby in the background. I always encourage that with services, you know. But if you do have to go, I'll certainly understand, because we are programmed to go 1 hour, but
okay.
Watkins, in his wisdom, put us longer so that if we're engaged in a meaningful conversation. Guard Jameson just texted me. He's in a meeting and he cannot call. Then Suzanne Kelly, who's our poet, she's on a critical conference call. So that's fine.
Okay.
But what a blessing to have Pato. But if you need to take care of the baby, but bottom line is...
As we're chatting, so that's okay. We can keep going while I'm warming the milk up.
I love it. I love those sound effects. I love it. You're being Mr. Dad. They say Mr. Mom. I say Dad. You're engaged in that. Can you talk about? Carrying the bowl? Have you ever in that week? Did
yeah,
you carry
yeah,
the
arms,
bowl?
The arms round. The arms
Would you
round.
Please
so,
describe
the
that
arms
thing?
Very much the most sacred part of the day. It's at the dawn the monks will go barefoot through the community, and it's the community with their bowl, and this is the only food that they get often for the day. The community who have stayed up cooking often in the early hours of the morning will then donate the food to the monks, and this is the exchange between the religious part of the community and the greater community, and it's a very lovely interaction and very special to partake of that and participate in that from the inside. It's really quite profound. And so this is the service of the community to support the monks. I'm just warming this milk up, Anne, as we go.
That's okay. You keep talking. I'll keep talking while you do that. Yes, it's a very meaningful experience because what I've noticed I'm looking at the time, it's too late, but anytime I want to go to a Buddhist temple, there's several, but I have my home Buddhist temple that I can go in there, and it's a strong, now these monks don't have to walk here. The people come to the temple, and it's a real wonderful way to have this mutual altruistic service. And what I've noticed is it gives a sense of belonging, a sense of family, and lots of times widowers, people who feel lonely, they cannot adapt to social environments, that they go to that temple, and I'm going to talk about widows and widowers. A lot of people, and they know they're dying, they know they're about to transition, they give themselves totally to the temple. They go, and that's it. That's it. And I find that very meaningful and rich. I see this in also in Sikhism. If you're hungry, you can always show up, like in the Sikh tradition. I've been a part of that for a long time. I mean, like anywhere, you can walk up to the door, knock on the door, and they'll feed you. Same way with the Buddhist temple, although some of the temples, because of where they're located, have a secure gate, which I understand. But even then, you can knock at the gate, and they'll, I find that very meaningful. I've known many people that knew they were going to transition of all professions. And they give of themselves to the temple. And also the reaching out to the families. Every time a new home, someone moves into a new home or the home is built, the monks go to that home and bless it. Right, Ben? And so I find that extremely meaningful. Ben, are you with me?
I am. I've got the boy in my arms.
For some reason it went off, but that's okay. I got you back. So you heard what I was saying, that you got your boy in your arms. I love it. Life is a miracle. And what I was saying, to me, it's very rich. And my favorite story about the monks, we were in Florida, and we went through Homestead, where a hurricane had come through and destroyed everything. So it was decided by the abbot, and they sit in rank. You know that. Of course, you know that. And they honor that rank of the longevity, and there's a lot to be said for that. And he said, let's go on down to the Florida Keys. Let's go to the tip of the United States. Well, we didn't know the entire island shuts down on a Wednesday. The entire island shuts down. So we go across the bridge. We get on the island. Now watch this. Nothing was open then, and I had to have them fed by noon in that time zone. They were flexible in that. And I thought, what am I going to do? And of course they can fast. That's okay. I swear that they have camel stomachs. And I called a Urantia book reader. Can you believe that? That's one thing about your Urantia book readers. If we know each other even if you don't know a Urantia book reader personally, you can call them. Now we'll text or email or whatever. He came where we were parked. It was pouring down rain. And I opened the van door, had the umbrella, and they told him, he said, thank you for coming to the aid of our teacher. Now they referred to me. See, that's true humility. I was learning, they were learning. And he said, well, there, I don't know what we're going to do. Y'all are going to have to come to my home, and I'll do whatever I can. And they said, I said, no, do you know a Thai restaurant? Any Thai restaurant? And he said, yes. I said, take us to our Vietnamese or, you know, whatever. And he said, yes, but they're closed. I said, just take us there. Watch what's going to happen. So we go. We didn't call, didn't do anything. All we did, the abbot and a monk, older monk, got out of the car with me with an umbrella and just walked around this old house. That's all we did. All of a sudden, the window flew open up on the second floor, and they started, you know, giving their respects. You know what they did? Quickly, they opened it up, and they fed us like royalty. And we were on the button. We were on the button. And you know what I love, Ben? I actually have their toothbrushes. Do you know what I'm talking about with the monks that I know so well? Those handmade toothbrushes? Hello. Hello. What is the wood those are made out of? It's a special wood, and when you're sitting in restaurants with them, they're going to pull those out after you eat. It doesn't matter where you are. And they're going to use, it's a long wooden handmade toothbrush with a brush on the end of it where it's been frayed. And they sit there, you know, and they just do it. I'm sure that's why they have such healthy teeth, right, Ben? Ben may be putting his son down for a nap. This is interesting. I hope we didn't lose Ben. I don't. Ben, he's putting his baby down. So I will become a talking head now. And so unless somebody else can call in until we get Ben back. And, oh, he's crying. Well, I'll speak a chant over him. And, oh. This is so precious. And I will speak a chant over here. This is Mercy for Others, the Sublime Attitude. This is the end of a chanting in the evening. I'm not sure if we do that in the mornings or not. No, I think. Okay. And maybe Ben will come back and do it in the, it's actually not the Thai language. May I be happy. May I be free from stress and pain. May I be free from animosity. May I be free from oppression. May I be free from trouble. May I look after myself with ease. May all living beings be happy. May all living beings be free from animosity. May all living beings be free from oppression. May all living beings be free from trouble. May all living beings look after themselves with ease. May all living beings be freed from all stress and pain. May all living beings not be deprived of the good fortune they have attained. All living beings are the owners of their actions, heir to their actions, born of their actions, related through their actions, and live dependent on their actions. Whatever they do, for good or for evil, to that will they will fall heir. May all living beings live happily, free from animosity. May all share in the blessings springing from the good I have done. May there be every good blessing. May the Devas protect you through the power of all the Buddhas. May you forever be well. May there be every good blessing. May the Devas protect you. These are the supernatural beings, like we would call angels. Through the power of all the Dhamma, that's the congregation. May you forever be well. May there be every good blessing. And may the devas protect you through the power of the Sangha. May you forever be well. I love that. And there's some more. Ben, are you back with us? I think he may. We may have lost Ben. Well, what an interesting way here to end the broadcast. But I'll keep reading here. Maybe Ben will come back. And I'm not sure what happened because it shows that he should be with us. The mic stays open. I guess his son, because we're going to be wrapping up here. I don't know what happened. And I'll finish this up. This is called the Dedication of Merit. And I won't even try to do that without a monk beside me. May all beings without limit, without end, have a share in the merit just now made, and in what other merit I have made. There are those who are dear and kind to me, beginning with my mother and father, whom I have seen or never seen, and others neutral or hostile. Beings established in the cosmos, the three realms, the four modes of birth, with one of four aggregates, wandering on from realm to realm. If they know of my dedication of merit, may they themselves rejoice. And if they do not know, may the devas inform them. By reason of their rejoicing in my gift of merit, may all beings live happily, free from animosity. May they attain the supreme, serene state and their radiant hopes be fulfilled. Now that is beautiful. Ben, are you there?
I am. I'm just I'm still trying to get him down. And so
I understand. That's okay. I just read the blessings that we do at the end of chanting, and I was wanting to do the actual chant if I can get into the mode of what is, the language. Let's see.
Give me 2-3 minutes.
Yes, sir. I'd ask. Yes, sir, absolutely. The good news, folks, you never get bored when you are a reader of the Urantia book. We haven't asked Ben yet how he came across the Urantia book. And let's pray now for this, our precious little brother whose son. And let us pray now. We speak peace. We speak calm. And we speak that his system calmed down now, that he's able to go into a quiet time with stillness. And while Ben is doing that, I will say that what led me to the Buddhist was, of course, the Urantia book. I was fascinated when I read about Buddhism. And many people know this, that my marching orders from the Urantia book, from the old book, is on the left-hand side. That's the way my memory serves me. I believe it's page 1012. And I'll read that. This is The Further Evolution of Religion, and this is paper 93, section 7. Religion can never be a scientific fact. Philosophy may indeed rest on a scientific basis, but religion will ever remain either evolutionary or revelatory, or a possible combination of both, as it is in the world today. New religions cannot be invented. That's an interesting statement. They're either evolved or else they're suddenly revealed. All new evolutionary religions are merely advancing expressions of the old and belief, new adaptation and adjustment. The old does not cease to exist. It is merged with the new, even as Sikhism budded and blossomed out of the soil in forms of Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, and other contemporary cults. And cults, we're all involved in cults, that means a religious group of people. I'm thinking of Jainism also, Zoroastrianism, all the major traditions. Primitive religion was very democratic. The savage was quick to borrow a land. Only with revealed religion did autocratic and intolerant theologic egotism appear. And here it is. The many religions of your rancho, that being our planet, are all good to the extent that they bring man, woman to God and bring the realization of the Father to men and women. It is a fallacy for any group of religionists to conceive of their creed as the truth. Such attitudes bespeak more of theological arrogance than of certainty of faith. There is not a religion on this planet that could not profitably study and assimilate the best of the truths contained in every other faith, for all contain truth. Religionists would do best to borrow the best in their neighbor's living spiritual faith rather than to denounce the worst in their lingering superstitions and outworn rituals. All these religions have arisen as a result of man's variable intellectual response to his identical spiritual leading. Now, they can never hope to attain a uniformity of creeds, dogmas, and rituals, for these are intellectual. But they can, and here comes the prophecy, and someday will, realize a unity in true worship of the Father of all, or the parent of co-creators of all, for this is spiritual and it is forever true. In the spirit, all men, women are equal. That's beautiful. That's my marching orders, man. So what year did you find the Urantia book? And we'll go back to that chant that I just did.
I've got the boy in my arms, by the way. He wasn't ready to go to sleep, but I've got him in my arms here. 2001, I think it was. I was in Birmingham to watch the Ashes Test, which is a cricket match between England and Australia. And I wandered off. I think the game might have finished early, and I found myself in a mall there in Birmingham, and which is where Pato is from, isn't it? If I'm not,
wrong. Yes,
There's a little sort of shop there, kind of looked like a little bit like a crystal New Age shop, but it had a whole row of Urantia books, and caught my eye. And so I asked the lady there, what were all those books? And she started explaining it to me. And as she was explaining it to me, she was moved to tears. And then she showed me a bunch of artwork that the book had inspired, that people had done. And I thought, well, I better get this. So that's how I came across it. And started reading it, just opening it up from place to place, and that was about 10 years ago.
Wow. And now, have you ever been able to be involved in a study group?
Yeah. When I was in Melbourne with Regina in Melbourne, there's a small group in Melbourne, Australia.
Mm-hmm.
Occasionally had the privilege of getting up to Sydney and spending some time with the Swaddlings, who are wonderful people.
Oh, yeah.
And enjoyed very much interactions with those guys up there. I did go to one national conference that the Australian group had, which was in Canberra once. There was a lot of really wonderful people. So had some study groups and did a little bit on the internet school as well. So I've had a little bit of exposure to formal study groups as well.
And that's important, and you know, what we did in Chicago, Ben, was an intensive day and night, but I never, you know, of course, you never get bored around your Urantia book readers, and I never get bored around interfaith. You never run out of things to talk about, and the important thing is that you respect each other, and you stay grounded and rooted in whatever you want, but that this is a virtual
study group.
You consider
yourself, just out of interest, Anne, do you call yourself a Christian when you're in the interfaith movement, or you talk about being a reader of your Urantia book, or how do you present yourself in an interfaith context? I'd be interested to know.
Sure. Okay, I've been a member of this particular interfaith council since 1995. I've helped co-found an interfaith council group in another city, and I am known as a Urantia book reader. Now we say the Urantia movement.
Yep.
And it takes a long time. I am an ordained Christian minister. I guess you know that.
Yep.
And people know that. And I'm very comfortable. I have been asked to introduce the Urantia book tomorrow night in a very large setting. I'm not sure. I'll have to look at my email. I'm trying to think. I've done it inside many places of all religions, only when asked. Only when asked. I don't impose. And it takes time and trust to get that. You can't just walk up and say, hey, I'm a Yabrancha book reader. Cool, dude. You know, they just don't get it. 95. Actually, 93 is at the Parliament of World Religions. And I'm going to say a kudos to Mo Siegel, you know, Celestial Seasoning, the founder of Celestial Seasoning.
Yep.
I worked very closely with Mo for many years, and Paula, traveled with Paula to these Whole Life Expos. And, you know, and I hope Mo, I think he's supposed to do a Saturday broadcast. I wish he could call in. He's probably climbing a mountain right now, Ben. He needs to come to Thailand, climb some of your mountains. He's always, and he is 5 years younger than me. I always put people in those categories. He's still climbing mountains. And those big, gigantic expos, 30,000 to 80,000 people from, we would roll in there on Thursday and leave on Monday. And we'd be on the floor from, we'd have to be on the floor at 9, and then we'd leave at 9 or 10 at night and then go eat and then stay up all night because we were so queued up for all that. That really exposed me to people of all religions. It really did. And some interesting people too, Ben. You really get some interesting people there that believe that they just came in on a starship. Okay, whatever. You know.
Yeah.
And so what, how do you present yourself? In the circle.
Sorry? Courses for courses. It depends on who I'm talking to. It's not something that I'm overt about because of I don't think it's going to be profitable for in my situation to do that. We're working in a cross-cultural Christian Buddhist environment, and a lot of the time your answer book just confuses people. So I tend not to be overt about it.
Sure.
But having said that, people who have come through and done the program, if they strike me as a certain type of person, then I'll introduce them to it. There have been a few people who have then gone away and gotten books and have started to read it, so that's good. But in the whole, they're the minority. Most of the time, I won't mention it to people at this stage. I mean, that might change in the future, but what we're doing here and the work we're doing here, I think it's not profitable to do so.
Well, it you know what you have to do? I'm going to say it again. There's a reason wisdom is an adjutant mind spirit that we can tap into. You need wisdom when you're functioning in any circle,
yep,
regardless of your background, that you don't hammer people into the kingdom, into the temple of the living spirit. And when I was in Chicago, I had a lot of engagement with people. Okay, let's talk about that. I'm looking at the front of my book. And my guest next week, by the way, folks, she's coming in. She wrote a book about health, how she lost a lot of weight, a living experience for her. And Vicki Arkins, yes. We're sitting in Chicago, and Vicki, we were talking about her inspiration. She's a longtime reader of the book and her inspiration for writing this book. And I'm telling you, it's a guaranteed success. So our next week's broadcast will be about that healthy, about that book and Mastery of Self and the stages of coming into the fullness of your own reality of the spirit realm. And she said, Andy, you know what inspired me? I never understood what it meant to be born again. I never understood that there are steps, and once you are born again, that then there are steps you have to still. She said, your old study guide, Passport to Eternity, it's been by my bedside for years and years and years, and it did it for me, and it inspired me to write this book. The process took 10 years. And I said, you know, those study guides were totally inspired. They just rolled through me, and I still carry mine in my book. And she looked at me, and she said, I know I'm born again. I said, yes, that's the conscious reception of the spirit. And she said, well, what about being spirit-filled? And I just waved my hand toward it. I said, so be it. Done. Because you just asked for it. It's over with. You're done. And she said, you mean that's it? I said, yeah, you want to go in the bathroom and be baptized in the bathtub? I actually got baptized because we went to a service on James's BMW motorcycle. And afterwards, we got a deluge of rain. And he said, oh, my gosh, you're getting wet. And I said, it's okay. I have on your leather jacket and my, you know, helmet and my silk pants. They'll dry. And, hey, we're getting baptized again. I've been baptized in a mill pond when I was a child. Icy cold mill pond running, which still works, that mill pond. The Jordan River, where the man of God held me under the water too long. And he said, well, I just want to make sure you were clean. I said, so now I've been baptized in a downpour after an anointed service with Reverend Carlton Pearson. So you don't have to be baptized, right, Ben?
No.
Do the Buddhists have a form of that, of some sort of initiation of any? Well, yeah, I'm thinking I've been sprinkled with the water by the.
There is
by
a lot
the,
of holy water, yeah.
Would you
yeah,
talk about?
Universal.
Would you talk about that experience when they take that and they spray you with the water?
Yeah, there's certain festivals that they'll use water, and they will use it in a very similar way to a Catholic priest going down the aisle and sprinkling it on the congregation. Very similar. And again, it's cleansing and blessing and very, you know, kind of common thing in when they're opening the house, as you talked about before, a house opening or a marriage or, you know, there's often this sort of sprinkling of water. It's a very common feature.
And I know that I've seen people come there and get holy water when someone is ill. Now, people say, well,
yeah,
that's just superstition. But you know what? If that person's faith and if the one that did the praying over the water,
mm-hmm,
there's that beneficent personality. You know what I'm talking about in the papers?
Yeah.
Do you know that quote? I'll ask in the chat room. Maybe somebody can tell us. Do you know that quote that it talks about healing? It was over there when they had the hospital, and it talks about the power of healing. First of all, the healing is in the mind, but also, you know, there can be times where the body is healed. Ben, I truly believe that. I'm a living example of that. I had a suddenly with my eyesight. I've wore glasses since I was 20 years old. And about, I'd been praying about it. I didn't know till my prophet buddy spoke it over me in 1986, and he didn't know me, that I had a disease in my eyes. And he said that through my faith, though, that disease would be healed. But he said it will take many years, and there will be a suddenly. That was in 1986. I woke up one morning about 10 years ago, 11 years ago. I walked downstairs. I was washing the dishes. I looked out across the deep woods. I could see. I haven't worn glasses since. I wear 1.2.
Wow.
Now, how do you explain that? That was, he spoke that over me in 1986. And then I had a suddenly. You can see some of my old pictures. I have on glasses, pretty serious glasses. And also, you know, you can hurt your eyesight by partaking of certain things in your body, you know, and people need to know that. You can actually hurt your eyesight with certain things that you do as far as partaking in your body. So I find that very interesting. And do you believe in manifestation of healing? Except even beyond the mind? You know,
I'm trying to get this boy to sleep.
That's okay. We're almost out of time. I love it. And so it's just, I'm going to tell you, I'm looking at
it. I do definitely, you know, want to leave room.
Can you speak up? They're saying that you're hard to hear, but I think it's because you have a baby in your arms.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just checked Facebook, and I will be bringing in some things. We've got some people checking in, I find this interesting. Is it serendipitous? I don't know. Does it matter? I don't know. The Council for Parliament of World Religions, who I do a lot of things with here on Facebook, I'll share it, is the Dalai Lama. The Parliament's closing plenary speaker provides thoughtful responses to 10 questions on time. I'll bring that in. And then also there's something from Wayne Dyer. No, Dr. Dyer. I don't know if he openly talks about it, but I've talked to his wife in length about this many years ago. I think he's openly talked about it. He's read the Urantia book listen to this. I love what he's saying today. And it's coming in while we're talking. How about that? And he doesn't always do this. Living is not a race. It is a journey, something to be enjoyed each day. You can do a great deal to help children to understand this important truth, and you will get a nice bonus as well. That is a lot less anxiety for yourself as part of the bargain. And it's Dr. Wayne Dyer, and I'll make a plug for him because I really like him, how to help your children be free of stress and anxiety. So I love Facebook. And then one of my future guests, he put something up. And by the way, you're a friend of his, Phil Gully, right? The great Quaker pastor. We talked several months ago. I said yes, we were in touch because I do, I will observe, it takes time. I met you on Facebook, and I don't have my calendar in front of me when he's coming in, but is he a masterful questioner or what? Can he ask masterful questions? Can you believe that? It's just incredible. Ben, are you there?
I am here. Yeah. But
the baby. That's I understand. I understand.
Try to get him to sleep.
Okay, go to sleep. I can try to chant. Let's see if I can. I just need you or the monk to set me in rhythm on this. Aham sohiko homi. Am I doing that right? Homi. Niduko homi. Avero homi. Abjapijo homi. Aniko homi. Suki achanam pariyam rami. Sabe sata sukita hontu. Sabe sata avera hantu. Sabe sata abaya paja hantu. Sabe sata aniga hantu. Sabe sata siki atanam pariyatantu. Sabe sata sabaduka pamukantu. Sabe sata lata samatatiyama vigatu kantu. Sabe sata kamasaka kamadayada kamayoni kamabadu kamapatisarana. Yam kamam karisanti kalayamba papakamba tasadayada bhavasanti. Sabe sata sata hantu avera sukha jave jivino. Sabe bhakavante tantu te. Hotu sabam sabakalam. Rakatantu sabha devata. Sabha buddha nirabandhane. Sati hantu nirantaram. Hotu sabam sabakalam. Rakatam sabha devata. Sabha sadandaravan hayana. Soti hantu niratam. Hotu sabam subangalam. Rakatantu sabha devata. Sabha sagaravatvane. Sati hantu nirantaram. And this is at night, so I don't know if we should do the dedication of merit at night. Well, Ben, was that okay?
That's great.
Thank you, sir. It takes a...
That was beautiful.
Thank you kindly. Well, that takes a lot of times with the monks. And I, if you tell John Prejean I did that on a podcast, he will call. You just have to, I wanted him to come on the air with us, and he agreed to do it. And I just right now send a lot of love and prayers toward him that he can do that. But the nighttime blessing is, I did read the English, so that would not be appropriate to do that now. So
it's
thank you.
It's nighttime over here.
Sir? Oh, it's nighttime there. Oh, okay. Well, can you chant it? Do you know how to
chant? I don't know. I mean, there's so many different chants. Every temple sometimes have their own kind of chant.
Okay,
Okay,
this is. We will end the broadcast with this, and then we'll end with Pato singing the song that you named your son after. I just love that. Life is a miracle. Let me see if I can get. Let me get back into the. Banana sadyanan katasa yana katanan me tisanka bagno hantu satanan tapa bamanka. Yipya kunavantaka mayam mata vidyadhyayo dittame kapayantirava ane madarshan veneno satatitante lokasaman te bhuma katu yonika panikala katuvakola samaranta bhavandavaye natamye patidanname anumodantu te saram yekanman apajadanti deva te samnivedanam mayadinanna punanam anudaranna etuna sabe sata sadahantu avera sukha javinno kema payanandaka papantu te dasa Sijanta Subham.
Well, that's beautiful, Anne. That's really lovely.
Blessings, and we all, oh, how sweet. We're going off now. And thank you so much, Ben. We have 4 minutes left, and we will end with our dear friend, Pato. Once again, I'm looking here. We already played Life is a Miracle up front. Looking, we don't have a full song. So he did New Day Dawning, right? So we'll end with, he did Universal Love.
Universal Love, yeah.
So my dear brother, my dear friend, I thank you. And when Dana, Eli, and I come, and they will be shooting some film, they're producers and directors, and they do very well, and they're very, very powerful young people. And it's going to be unique, what we do. And thank you so much, and God bless everyone. And bye to our little Life is a Miracle baby. Thank you. And we do have a new day done. Bye for now, Ben. God bless.
Thanks so much, Anne. You do a great job. Thank you very much.
Oh, thank you kindly.
Bye-bye.
And I can hear the angels calling. Oh yes, it is a new day dawning. It's gotta be universal love. Oh yes, there is a new day.